It is, of course, National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. All throughout the month of October, we've been talking about cybersecurity-related topics, and identity assurance is one of the issues that's mixed up in the concept of cybersecurity. One expert in that area is Dr. James Carafano. He is the director of the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign Policy Studies at the Heritage Foundation and author of Private Sector Public Wars, Contracting and Combat, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Future Conflicts, and also writing about cybersecurity and identity assurance for the Heritage Foundation. And Dr. Carafano, thanks for being on the program with me today.
It's good to be with you.
Nice to have you back. You posted on the Security Debrief blog a couple days ago, talking about identity assurance and the fact that we need to make sure that we know when we are connecting with people and when people are connecting with the federal government who exactly it is we're connecting with. Where has this manifested itself so far, and what exactly is it that we need to be aware of when it comes to identity assurance?
There's actually a great example of it. The FBI put out a press release not too long ago in which they pointed out a growing phenomenon, and it's a crime, and it's kind of like a spin on the old, you get an email from a guy and he says, hey, I got some money for you here in South Africa or thing. And what it is they go and they steal people's passwords and identities on social networking sites. This is often done through something called phishing, or where in a sense they get somebody to give you the information. And then once they get that information, they basically go in and take over your account, change the password, so that they pretend to be you. And then they start contacting your friends with messages like, I'm in France and I'm stuck and I don't have money for a plane ticket, or I've just been arrested and I need money. And so basically they try to get them to send people money. And you have to realize how these scams work is, you would get an email from your sister in Chicago and she says, I'm stuck in Beirut, I need $1,000 for an airfare, and you would think, well, this is nuts, right? Well, these guys, they only have to hit on one in a million, mm-hmm. right? Because doing these crimes they're very inexpensive, and if they just get a few people here and there, and these things often work with people who are old and they get a lot of this stuff and they're not going to check, right? So it's a great example how people can use social networking tools for malicious activity, and it's just something that we have to be very careful of. So you say, hey, someday what's to keep some bad actor from going on Twitter and saying there's an accident on 395, don't go there, mm-hmm. right? And driving people in a different direction, and driving into a car bomb, or spreading some kind of malicious rumor or something. So I just think it's something that people need to be cognizant of. Particularly the federal government is increasingly using social networking tools to, get out public information.
It's interesting that you raise the Twitter example, because we've seen the news reports in the sports world of people pretending to be sports figures, and there's no reason that somebody couldn't establish a Twitter account and pretend to be the Department of Transportation or the Defense Department or some small department that nobody's really heard of too much in the general public, or even make up something that sounds official and pretend to disseminate information that is misleading or damaging.
And that's exactly right. And you think, well, it may not be a big problem on a kind of a quiet Sunday afternoon, but, think of this, it happened in the middle of Katrina, and people went online and started pretending to be the Red Cross, mm-hmm. and saying, send us money. There's a crisis, and people are sending money to some phony, companies ripping off your money and keeping it.
Yeah. You wrote a report for Heritage called Social Networking and National Security, How to Harm Web 2.0 to Protect the Country, and I'm going to get that linked up on the in-depth page on federalnewsradio.com. But you're talking in this about how computers and Web 2.0 have the potential to really alter national security. Talk about the concepts in this a little bit for me.
Well, please. I mean, I think there's some incredible advantages, and we're already exploiting many of them. For example, in the case of H1N1 flu, the Centers for Disease Control is doing an enormous amount using social networking tools to get information out to people. Other federal agencies are doing this as well. All this is great stuff because the advantages of social networking are manifold. You can target specific audiences. You can reach a lot of people in different ways. You can do it very quickly. You can do it in many ways very cheaply. So it can be a very powerful tool. There's something in national security called risk communications where you're warning people, whether it's about a pandemic or a natural disaster or a potential terrorist attack or somebody that you're looking for. It's a suspicious character. So that's a great use. You can collect valuable information and through social networking tools. A lot of what we knew was going on inside Iran was because people were tweeting and sending videos and various other things. That had an enormous amount of intelligence value. There's a whole litany of these things you could go through, but the big kind of stop sign or red flag in the paper is, you know, we have to think about information assurance is how do we know that who is saying this and why are they saying it? When I was getting, you know, a lot of information from Iran during the protests after the election, I was getting all these videos and all these things and saying, how do I know that, you know, this stuff is accurate? And indeed, there were cases that where Iranian agents were going into chat rooms and on tweet sites, and they were trying to suck people in to find out who they are,
mm-hmm.
or they were trying to direct people to say, come here for a protest,
yeah.
and then they would arrest them. So, you know, the bad guys have kind of already broken the code on how to exploit these things.
How do we think backwards? I have to admit, I would not have thought, I guess I don't think badly.
You're not a malicious person.
I guess not. And so how do we get into that mindset, at least from the perspective of I'm sitting in an agency and I need to figure out what bad guys might do so I can at least be aware of it and think forward?
That's a great question. You know, the first thing we always ought to remember is this is a dynamic environment. Anything you do that works today may not work tomorrow. Every measure you're going to come up with, somebody's going to come up with a countermeasure. Every safeguard you come up with, somebody's going to come up with a way to jump over it. So the one thing you have to realize is that this is an evolving competition. You're always going to have to be out there staying one step ahead. That's the most important thing, I think. One technique that a lot of people use is called red teaming, where they put some people in a room and say, think like a bad actor and tell me what you might do. And it's incredible what people come back in and say, and then you think, oh, my God. Now that, and I, you know, my point to say this is not that we should not engage in social networking and that the federal government shouldn't do this. You know, for example, there was some talk about the Department of Defense banning the use of Facebook and other social networking tools because they could be used to inject, you know, viruses and things like that into computers. Somebody could send you a video and you upload it and, you know, drops a virus in your computer.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, a very static, you know, kind of ridiculous policy. It's not going to, you know, really stop the spread of viruses all that much. And more importantly, you're denying a tremendous and valuable resource to people. So you've got to realize that with every good, there comes bad. You know, as soon as you invent something, somebody figures out a way to pervert it. You just have to anticipate and know that that's going to happen.
I guess, and that's what I guess can be the big futility in this is if you're not motivated to be evil, it must be really, really challenging for people in the cybersecurity realm to figure out what somebody bad might do next. And I guess I wonder if you can ever get ahead and be on the offense against this, or if we're constantly going to be playing defense.
You can do it both ways, right? There's a thing called a honeypot, which is a malicious technique, which is where you, suck people in with a good sounding thing and then you steal stuff from them. Well, you can do that to bad guys too. You can set up traps for bad guys, you know, to make you look like it's a sucker, right? And then they'll come to you.
Mm-hmm.
So you can set up a chat room, for example, say, come here and talk about malicious things you're going to do, and then you can find people. Or you could pretend to be the kind of person that have people come and steal. So you can proactively go out there and look for bad people on the internet as well.
Kind of like those scams where they tell somebody
right,
who's
sure.
wanted that they won the lottery and they come and pick up their prize and go to jail.
Yeah, you can do that online. Basically all the things the bad guys can do, you know, the good guys can do as well. But the point is you have to be you have to be proactive. And, you know, here's the other piece, too, is, you know, we have to do this in a way that people respect people's freedom of speech and their right to privacy. I mean, we don't want the government to know everything about what we do and all our information, right? So the government has to be respectful of what it's doing. We don't want to be monitored online. We don't want the government monitoring our Facebook, right? So when government moves into these things, they have to always think about not just respecting the letter of the law, but respecting the spirit of the law, not creating a climate where, you know, a big brother watching you all the time everywhere. That doesn't mean that you don't go look for bad actors, because the bad actors are where the good people are. That's where they hide.
Dr. James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation is my guest. He is the director of the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign Policy Studies and author of Private Sector Public Wars, Contracting and Combat, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Future Conflicts. I have a few more questions for you, Dr. Carafano. Can you stick with me for a little bit longer?
Sure.
Okay, I appreciate that very much. We'll be back in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Today's Emergency Preparedness Series is brought to you by the D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency.
October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and the Help Wanted sign is out at the Department of Homeland Security. DHS is hiring up to 1,000 new cyber experts to bolster security of the nation's computer networks. The announcement follows a wave of cyber attacks on federal agencies, including a July assault that knocked government websites off the Internet, and earlier intrusions into the country's electrical grid. I'm Mark Seagraves.
The flu is already here, so it's time to get your seasonal flu shot. Doctors' offices, clinics, and pharmacies have seasonal flu vaccine available right now. The seasonal flu shot is the best way to keep yourself from getting sick from the seasonal flu and passing it on to others. In addition to getting vaccinated, you can prevent the spread of contagious diseases like seasonal flu and H1N1 by covering your cough, washing your hands, and staying home if you're sick. For more information on the flu, call 311 or visit the D.C. Department of Health at doh.dc.gov.
Our memory is a store of precious moments, moments of pleasure and of sorrow, thrilling moments of success and moments of peace and beauty. That's what life is all about. But for people with epilepsy, precious moments can disappear without a trace. Seizures mean moments lost, never to be regained. And for many, seizures can mean the loss of independence and opportunities that everyone should have a chance to enjoy. Millions of Americans, including thousands of federal workers and their families, live with seizures. And this year alone, another 200,000 people in the U.S. will be diagnosed with this medical condition. The Epilepsy Foundation provides help and hope through research and family services. Please designate CFC 10568. The Epilepsy Foundation, 10568.
My life changed suddenly. I became very ill. The doctor told me I had approximately 6 months to live.
LaDonna LaPosa was diagnosed with cancer, and her fight had just begun.
One day, my husband got an out-of-state paper. And on the science page was a tiny little article about tests being done. By that time, I didn't have any strength left, but Novartis let me be in their clinical trial.
A patient will stop at nothing in their fight against cancer. It's that same determination that drives research at Novartis. Novartis is committed to helping doctors and patients like LaDonna fight cancer and live with cancer.
I took the medicine, and today I feel terrific. I've got to welcome two more grandchildren during the years that I've been alive. Life is good.
Novartis. Think what's possible.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and my guest is Dr. James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation. We are talking about Cybersecurity Awareness Month and Identity Assurance and Web 2.0 technology. I had Molly O'Neill, the former CIO at the Environmental Protection Agency, on the air with me yesterday, Dr. Carafano, and we were talking about the CIO Council's guidance on Web 2.0 technology. And Molly made a really good point that you address in this backgrounder that I'm reading, which is we shouldn't get too twisted around the axle about any one particular Web 2.0 tool or any suite of tools, because there's a good possibility 6 months from now, 2 years from now, whatever, people might not really be using it. We saw a couple of months ago where MySpace laid off a ton of people because their traffic is way down and they're hardly signing up any new users.
Yeah, this presents a unique challenge for government. You know, that's one problem, which is these tools are developing pretty quickly. The one thing government should do is they shouldn't get around to investing a lot of money in building their own tools, because the odds are the private sector is going to crank these out faster, and they're going to discard them faster than the government can even get around to doing that. And the other thing is, you know, we don't care that our kids get on these things and waste hours on Facebook, right? I do care if a federal employee that I'm spending money on is spending time on Facebook. And because, you know, we want them to be doing things that are effective. Everybody can, you know, give you an example, Department of Homeland Security has a blog. I think it's useless. It's basically press releases online. That's not a blog, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure there's a bang for the buck there. They spent an enormous amount of money trying to get inputs into their quadrennial Homeland Security review thing with online collaborative tool. Spent a lot of money setting that up. They got some comments. I'm not really sure what they can do with them. So I'm not sure there's the cost-benefit thing is there. So the challenge is, you know, from the federal state, you want people to do a cost-benefit when they look at adapting these commercial programs. Part of the problem is there's not a lot of good research on this stuff. I mean, these things move so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Before we have good academic and market research on something, you know, it's gone and moved on. So I think adapting these things from a cost-benefit perspective, that's a real challenge for federal agencies.
A big step toward that, it seems, was when the General Services Administration announced that they had negotiated terms of service agreements so that agencies could feel like, okay, I at least have somebody in the government's stamp of approval to be able to get on some of these sites and do some of these things and not get into trouble on the back end.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, standards of practice, policy guidance, these are really good tools, and you've got to do your kind of homework up front on the legal issues, the policy issues, and everything, and not be so much technology focused, because if you get your wired up, you know that I'm going to be the person on YouTube. Well, you know, a month from now it might be not be YouTube. So the idea is flexibility, adaptability, creativity, innovation, but in a structured way where you can do some cost benefit risk analysis, and you can not have to worry necessarily about the legals and the public diplomacy and the public relations issues like that. So you're building the architecture, and that allows people to do these things. Rather than fixating on the technologies per se, is probably a good strategy.
Last question, Dr. Carafano. I mentioned I'm going to link up your paper, Social Networking and National Security, How to Harness Web 2.0 to Protect the Country, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. If I'm working at an agency and concerned about this issue and I read your paper, what do you, as the author of it, want me to take away from it?
I think that to go to your agency and look and say, are we addressing these questions on cost-benefit analysis, security, information assurance? Do we know what our customers want? Do we know what business we're in? To ask the tough questions of your agency to say, are you going at this in the right way? And the other thing I would really encourage people is to go on GovLoop. GovLoop is a website that's a collaborative social networking tool. It's designed for government employees who are interested in social networking. It's GovLoop. It's a great resource. I use it all the time. Lots of interesting conversations going on. It's a good resource.
I appreciate you being on the show to talk to me about these issues, as always, and I will be happy to link your stuff up.
And I got to tell you, I learned about GovLoop by listening to Federal News Radio. So.
Wow, that's
so there you go.